Hello, everyone. I'm Rob. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is November 13th, 2004. And got a sponsor and a home group. And thank you, Billy, for asking me to come down here. It's a good excuse to come down to this little piece of heaven down here. It's a definite change from, you know, what I'm used to is sitting in traffic for hours and really testing the 11th step, you know, in traffic usually. So it's nice to come down here, and it's funny. It's like as soon as I started heading down 29, as soon as I hit right about this area, Madison or something, it seems like Leonard Skinner always goes right into the player, you know, and I'll just crank, you know, roll the windows down, and I'll cruise, I feel comfortable down here, you know. I grew up in the country, and I enjoy it, so it's nice to be back, and got to enjoy a good meetings yesterday, and just relaxed all today. Actually went swimming in a lake, and it was very chilly. I think I jumped the gun on that, but it was nice, and so it's good to be down here, and I'm happy you asked me to come back and speak. And I'll go right into it pretty much. I started drinking when I was about 13, and it's funny. A lot of people that I hear speak always share about how before they found a drink, or you know, before they started drinking, they felt different, or they felt just uncomfortable and out of place lots of times. And I, for the longest time in my sobriety, I was like, no, like I always had friends, you know. I felt like I was really cool, you know. and I think that might have been my ego. But now looking back, from about 13 to 20, I started off. I had bleach blonde hair, and I was a skater kid, you know. And then I cut off all my hair, and I became really preppy, you know. And then I had dreadlocks down to my shoulders, and I, you know, was a hippie. And then I had cornrows, you know. and it was like I was always like a chameleon, you know. I was always trying to fit in somewhere, you know. And now it's hard to keep the hair in my head that I have left, you know. So, so you know, we'll see how long that lasts. But so now looking back, I really can see that. I mean, obviously, I was not comfortable with who I was, you know, and I felt like I was always having to try to fit in somewhere, you know. Whether I had friends, you know, it didn't matter. I always felt like I had to do more to fit in. My father passed away young, and you know, that certainly didn't make me an alcoholic. It comes up later in my story. And my mom, she raised me wonderful, always provided for us, all on her own. And she was an alcoholic, and she ended up getting sober. But before she had gotten sober, it was definitely easy for me to get my hands on some alcohol, you know. And I held off for a while, you know. My buddy was drinking and smoking pot and everything else way before I was. And I would say, no, like I shouldn't do that, you know. I've heard bad things, and I pushed it off and pushed it off. And then I don't know what it was. I gave in eventually, you know. And my buddy and I remember I stole a case of beer from my mom, and it was easy. I stole a case, and I took a case for her, and I said, I was like, oh, Mom, I put a case of beer in the fridge for you. And she's like, wow, that's really nice. Like, thank you. I was like, no problem, you know. And I went downstairs with my case of beer, and me and my buddy, you know, cracked a beer and started drinking it, and I was like, whoa, this is terrible. You know, first off, it was warm, so it wasn't good tasting whatsoever. And obviously, I didn't have that acquired taste that I eventually acquired. But I had that one beer, and I had another beer, and you know, I know my buddy was pushing me, and I, you know, had a couple, and I probably had five beers, maybe. You know, I'm certainly not a big guy, and five or six beers, and I was tore up, you know. and you know, that night, it was just me and my best friend Luke, and for some reason, we went out and beat mailboxes with our fists and broke into some cars, you know, just ones that were open, you know. And I certainly wasn't raised that way, you know, and I wouldn't have ever done that if I was sober. But for some reason, it just seemed like a fun thing to do, you know. And so we just walked up and down the roads and did that. And I mean, I was having a blast, you know. I remember cars would come and we'd jump off the side of the road and hide. And I remember I you know, I've always been small and skinny, and I jumped and just dived through like a three wood picket fence or whatever. And I just dived right through. And my buddy was heavier than me. He jumped and dived and got stuck in it. And I just remember the lights shining right on his face, and he was stuck in the fence. And I was just laughing and having a great time. You know, I felt so carefree. I had no worries. I wasn't thinking about school. I wasn't thinking about, do I fit in, you know. I wasn't thinking about anything, really. I just felt so free, and my mind was clear, and I never felt this way before, you know. And really, I wish, I can never describe it, and some people are really good at describing, like, the feeling that you get from alcohol. And for me, I obviously know I get a different feeling than, like, say, my sister. You know, she can have a glass of wine and put it down, and it's not a big deal. For me, it's like I get something from it, and I want more, you know. And once I have a little bit, it's done. You know, I want a lot more, and I'll find it, and I'll do whatever it takes to get it. And I would keep doing that on and on. But that first time, I mean, I had a blast, and I ended up, you know, I was really sick the next day, but that didn't occur, you know, that didn't really matter to me. All I could remember was, man, we had a blast last night, you know. And me and my buddy were like, yeah, we should do that again, you know. It wasn't like a big deal. We weren't like, I'm doing that every day. It wasn't anything like that, but we're like, we should get some more buddies, you know, and we should do this again sometime, you know, with some friends and stuff. And that's how it started. You know, I can't really tell. I mean, I know I probably started almost every weekend from that point on, just about. As much as I could usually get my hands on it, and other, you know, other substances. If I could get my hands on that, sure, I'd give it a try, you know. And it was really anything that just made me feel a little different, made me not think about reality, really, just let me feel like a release. You know, that's how it started. And I had a blast, you know. I don't badmouth alcohol. I loved it, you know, and I still love it. I just proved to myself that I can't drink it, you know. And from 13 till 16, I pretty much drank and you know, dabbled in other things with no consequences, and had a blast at doing it. You know, I had very small consequences. My mother started picking up on it. I remember a time that I'm you know, not proud of. My mom got sober, went to a detox, and I remember her coming home, and I had been, you know, I'd been smoking pot, you know, and she came home and she, you're high, you know. I'm like, I'm not high, you're high, you know. That was always what I would say back at her, and I just remember her face, you know, like, brand new, fresh out of detox, and here's her son, you know, just getting tore up at home while she's away, you know. And I would do things like that, and I really, honestly, I didn't listen to a thing that my mom had to say, and she could attest for that. You know, she saw kind of where I was heading, but there was nothing she could do about it, because I wouldn't let her get in the way of it. You know, she would say, you're grounded. And I was like, that's fine, you know, I'll just sneak out later. And she'd be like, you know, there was nothing she could say to that stuff. Or I'm going to send you to a military school. Be like, yeah, that's fine. I'll leave and I'll just be homeless, you know. And I would just, you know, manipulate it and work my way out of all that stuff. And there was like there wasn't much she could do to stop me, you know, and there wasn't much anybody could do to stop me when I wanted it. And so I drank from 13 to 16 without any real consequences. And when I turned 16, I got my license. I had the biggest truck at my high school, And that made my ego was probably about the size of my truck, you know. and I mean I loved it, you know. I was like I felt like I had arrived, you know. I was 16 in ninth grade. No one else was 16 in ninth grade. I was a little old for my grade. And so, you know, right there, I was like, I'll drive my friends around, you know. It was like I had a purpose, you know, and like everybody needed me, you know. And I drove for 4 months. In 4 months, I got a DUI and a possession of marijuana. And I remember very fondly sitting on the curb in handcuffs. And the officer let about 4 or 5 of my friends just go, like, oh, just get out of here, you know. And I'm sitting there in handcuffs because I was the driver. And I was like, man, this is bad, you know. And I felt that lump in my throat, you know, like, oh, this is terrible, you know. And this was my first real consequence, and I could feel this consequence, you know. I could feel it on my wrists. I could feel it inside, you know. And I was young, I was 16, so they couldn't hold me, and I remember my mom coming to pick me up that night, and I remember her crying and being really upset, you know, and, you know, I won't probably ever forget that her face that day, but I felt like you're making a big deal out of nothing. I was like, I'm the one in trouble, you know, this is going to mess with my life, you know, and I, during my whole, you know, drinking story, it never occurred to me that I was hurting other people, you know, that I was hurting the people that loved me the most. It never occurred to me, you know, and obviously I did hurt them, but like I said, I never thought about it. It never crossed my mind. And this was my first introduction to the law, really, you know, and AA meetings. I had gone to maybe one or two before that. I was introduced to AA around 15 or 16, you know, and you know, I had urinalysis, probation, I had like Region 10 and you know, these alcohol programs and all this stuff. And I'd go to these outpatient programs, and they would teach me, I mean, everything, you know. This neurotransmitter does this, and that does this. And, you know, and I learned all about these medical terms and all this stuff. And knowing all that stuff never helped me whatsoever. And the judges telling me, like, you need to stop drinking, never worked, you know. I knew what I got from alcohol was way stronger than any of these consequences that I had gotten to this point, and I, you know, later in my story got. But I went to some meetings, got my slip signed. That was about as far as I gotten into AA, you know. I didn't want anything to do with it. I felt like I'm young. Everybody my age is partying. And most of my friends were like, everybody gets a DUI, don't worry about it, you know, everybody, this happens to everyone, like, you know, relax, don't worry about it. And so I jump through the hoops, and I work really well when people are trying to keep me in control, and I have to jump through certain hoops. I do it really well, you know. I'll stop doing the things that show up on drug tests, you know. I will only drink when I know I can get around it and not get in trouble, and I did really well with this, and I got off of probation, but nothing inside of me changed, and I drank, you know, while on probation, because there was nothing. I didn't want to stop, you know. I wanted to be out of trouble, but I felt like this is ridiculous, you know. I don't need to do this. And I remember the day I got off probation, and I was fishing with a buddy, and I was drinking, and I got a call that I was off probation, and, you know, without thought, I got high with my buddy, and we just continued on drinking, and nothing changed, you know. I learned nothing from this experience. And I went on from there for a while, again, partying, having a good time, really doing my own thing. I managed to get by in school, you know, and by the time I was, about 17, around 17, I was probably drinking almost every single day. I never had a full day of high school in my 4 years. Always got out early. I never skipped. I always got out early. They just let me go. And I would go home and I would drink. I would just start drinking, you know. And I did it every day, you know. And there was no, my buddies did it with me. And it just seemed like the normal thing to do. I ended up getting in more trouble, of course. You know, it's just a matter of time. I usually lasted about a year, you know. I'll get off probation, I'll last a year, get in trouble again. You know, in 18, I was down at on spring break, down in Myrtle Beach, and I passed out in a hotel room and was woken up in handcuffs. I blacked out, you know. I'm definitely a blackout drinker. I was completely blacked out. I came out of that blackout in handcuffs with getting, you know, walked out of the hotel room, and I just kept yelling, like, help, like, someone help me, you know, and people were just looking at me, and I had no idea what went on, but I know I got charged again with another possession of marijuana and underage possession of alcohol, and I was 18, and this was my first time going to a jail. Luckily, I didn't have to stay long. I am not a guy that's cut out for jail. You know, and some people say, like, they hear the door clank and they feel, like, comfortable, like, finally that's over. I felt like, oh, no, you know, like, I have to really watch my back now, you know. And jail was, I was not comfortable at all in any kind of situation like that. And it woke me up a little bit, sitting there, kind of all the alcohol coming out of my system and having a little time to think. You know, I could see at this point that these events, you know, they were happening because of my drinking, you know, and I could see that. And I knew that I was starting to get these consequences that were pretty heavy to me, you know. And they started on the balance, you know. The consequences started to outweigh it a little bit, you know, of the... started to outweigh what I got from drinking. And sitting in that jail, I got out like the next day, and I was like, I have to do something about this. I have to change, you know. And I had moments of clarity like this, and moments of willingness. And this time, I don't know, something in me, you know, pushed me to actually give it a try, you know. And I was 18, and I knew I was going to be back having the drug test and back on all this stuff again. And so I was like, all right, you know. Maybe this is a good time to try to give AA a try. And so I gave AA a try. I went to one, maybe two meetings a week, you know. I felt like I was giving it a try, you know. I felt like I was doing a lot, you know. I got a sponsor. I don't think I knew what... I didn't understand that relationship at all. I didn't understand sponsee relationship whatsoever. I just thought it was a guy that called my sponsor and I give him a call and tell him, like, yeah, everything's good. You know, that's about as deep as it ever got. It was like, hey, yeah, what's up, Jesse? Like, I'm good. You know? And I never thought anything about it. And I lasted about 5 months as a visitor in AA, and towards the end of that 5 months, I mean, the best way I can describe it is I just feel pissed. I feel pissed all the time when I'm sober, when there's no, when there is not the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm not drinking, I just feel very angry all the time. And I feel like people are stupid, you know, and I feel like they're getting in my way, and I feel like I just feel really on edge constantly. And towards the end of that five months, my girlfriend at the time, who was completely my higher power, I mean, she was my everything, you know. She was young, she wanted to go out and party, and I felt like I know what happens to young girls when they drink, so I'll go and watch her, you know. And And without thought, I just went, you know, and I ended up at like an old drug dealer's house, and a bong got passed to me, and without thought, I took a hit, and honestly, I inhaled, and I was like, that kind of feels good, you know, started giggling like a little girl, you know, and it was like, it felt good, but deep down inside, I knew this was a bad idea, you know, and I even said to myself that night, I said, self, you know, I said, you're just going to smoke pot, you know, you're going to do the maintenance program, you know, and no drinking, because you get in trouble when you drink, and that lasted a week, and I was sitting in a party, and I felt uncomfortable again, you know, and I you know, as high as I could want to be, but, it wasn't the same, you know, I get something different. I get something from alcohol. Alcohol makes me outgoing and makes me, it does something that other drugs don't. They just never did for me, you know. And I was sitting there and I knew what would make that feeling go away, you know. I felt like everybody was having such a good time and I felt like I was just a stick in the mud, you know, sitting there on the couch. And I cracked a beer and I started drinking. And I blacked out that night, and I know I ended up home. And that's, you know, I know I drove home, and it was right back off to it, you know. Picked up right where I left off, or farther, you know. And you know, I went for a little while. I went from, you know, I had gotten a job doing plumbing work. I was out of high school now. And I was drinking every single day, and every day it was getting very. It wasn't as fun anymore, you know. It was more of drinking to overcome a craving that was way stronger than me, you know. And every day I would get off work. Well, every day I would go into work and I'd feel sick as a dog, you know, just physically so sick, like my stomach, my head, just hungover. And I was working with this guy who was actually sober in AA, and I had gotten this job, you know, prior to me drinking, you know. And every day I would come in there and I'd be like, Tim, it's like, I'm not going to drink today. You know, I'd say this every day. I was like, I feel so sick, I can't do it, you know. And he would be like, oh, you'll probably change your mind around 4 or 5 p.m., you know. And I just wanted to hit him. You know what I mean? I was like, you don't know me. Like, I feel sick. Like, I'm not going to drink today, you know? And he was right. About 4 o'clock, I felt this energy inside. I felt like, this anxiety, and I felt like, oh, you know, this afternoon is going to be fun, you know? And it wasn't like I was doing anything new or different. But right about 5, I'd get to my car, you know, Guns N' Roses would blare. And I would drive right to the beer store, grab a 22, and drink that on my way home. And lots of times I'd tell myself, I'm just going to drink this 22, jump in the shower, I'm going to sit and watch TV and relax, you know. Never happened, you know. Sometimes I'd drink the 22 and I'd make it home, but then I'd go right back to the store and grab some more. Sometimes I'd drink the 22, never make it home, you know, maybe meet a friend, or go buy like a 12 pack, you know. But usually I would make it home about 3 in the morning, you know. Wake up about 6, puke, go to work and do it again, you know. This was like, I can't even tell how long it was. It felt like years, you know. I felt like I was getting older by the, you know, every day I felt like I was getting like a year older, you know. And I kept doing this and kept doing this, and drinking started being, it was maintenance, and it wasn't very fun anymore. Most of my friends had went to college. Some of the friends that didn't go to college really didn't want much to do with me unless I had something that they wanted, and vice versa, you know. And it got kind of lonely, but there wasn't anything I could do about it. I started to get to that point where I couldn't couldn't imagine, you know, I couldn't imagine life without drinking, and I couldn't imagine going on drinking because it was starting to be kind of hellish, you know. And around 20, I ended up getting another DUI. I went to jail again, and this time was different from when I was 18. You know, when I was 18, I said it was like kind of a wake up call, like you need to do something about this. And that second DUI at 20, it was more of a like a submission. You know, I remember it was pouring rain. I was coming back from North Carolina, drunk as a skunk, and I got pulled over, and the cop was tapping on the window, and I just sat there and looked at her, and I finished my beer right in front of her, and then I opened up the door, and she obviously knew I'd been drinking, you know, and she was like, let's do this sobriety test, and I was like, no, I was like, I'm not doing it, you know. I was like, just take me to jail. And I just felt done. You know, I felt like, whatever, just take me away, you know. And I did that little stint in jail. And when I got out, I felt like I resigned to it, you know. It was like I felt like these are the cards I'm dealt. I'm just going to drink to the end or drink till I kill myself or, you know, something happens or, you know, I'm locked up and so I kind of went as hard as I could, you know. I got out of jail and I started drinking that day, you know. And I set out to drink as much as I possibly could and just to get out of myself, you know, and not feel the way I felt, you know. And I tried to do that, and I ended up, you know, I had a restricted license for my job and stuff like that, and I still continued drinking, driving home, you know, and I ended up totaling my car one night at 3 a.m. after a party, and it was me and this girlfriend, and she had been driving my car, and I told her, you know, I was like, oh, let me drive, you know, let me drive, and somehow I talked her into letting me drive, which was a bad idea, and I didn't even make it a quarter mile, and I wrecked my car off about 15, 20 foot straight drop off into a creek, and it turns out I fractured my back, my vertebrae in the car wreck. I jumped out of the car and took off running, told her to get out of there, you know, and I just took off running, because I knew I didn't want to go to jail again, you know. And you know, luckily, I don't know if it's luckily, I guess, I mean, it is what it is. I managed to lie my way out of getting in trouble again, and you know, I totally lost that car, you know. I had no insurance because my DUI, you know, my insurance was so expensive. I was like, ah, no, I won't do the insurance thing. So I totally lost this car, and I, you know, went to the hospital, and I walked in, and they're like, well, let's do some x-rays. They took x-rays, and they came back. They're like, well, your vertebrae has been crushed, like, lay down, you know? And I was like, oh, really? It's that bad, you know? And I got out of the hospital a few days later, and I had a full plastic back brace from, you know, my pelvic bone up to my collarbone all the way around my body. And this shook a little sense into me, you know. I said, I'm going to give this a try again. I'm going to not drink. I didn't believe that I needed AA, but I knew I shouldn't be drinking. And I went a week laying in bed in my plastic back brace, feeling like I could just explode into pieces, you know. Just I felt this itch inside. And I was just trying to shake it on my own, and at this point, I mean, alcohol was a power greater than myself, you know, and I had no control over this, and I called up a buddy, and just like good friends, he came and picked me up, we went to a party, and started drinking again, and I lasted a couple months, and those couple months were hell. I mean, I was just drinking, I couldn't work, I just laid there, you know, woke up around noon or two, and I just start drinking, and I was worthless, you know, and there was a couple points I remember laying on, coming home, just drunk as a skunk, laying on the ground with a gun loaded, you know, pointed at my head, just wanting to just just wanting to end it, you know. I didn't want to live anymore, and I hated the way I was feeling at this point, you know. And luckily, I mean, I never had the power to do anything, to pull the trigger or do anything like that, but my life had gotten really small, you know, and it wasn't fun anymore, and I was 20 years old, you know. I don't know how some people go till they're 40, you know. I mean, I at this point, it was awful, you know, and I went out one night. It was nothing different or nothing new. I went drinking with some friends and stuff, and I know I ended up doing, I did something. I got in a fight with one of my buddies. I know they kicked me out of the house. I know I was in Charlottesville walking down the street with a bottle of wine in my hand, and then I came to the next day, and I woke up, and I felt anger, I felt sad, and tears were just coming down my face, you know, and at that moment, I don't know, it was like something had come over me, you know, and I didn't want to do it anymore, and I felt like I couldn't do it anymore, and I had this moment of clarity, and I gave my mom a call, because I knew she was sober and Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and I gave her a call, and I said, you know, I said, I can't do this, you know, I don't want to live. I was like, this, I hate my life, you know, and she realized, like, I better do something, or he's going to change his mind really soon, because that's how it works for me, you know. You give me a little bit of time, I'm like, oh, that was really irrational, you know, like I was really being dramatic there, like, life's not that bad, you know, now I'll go drink again, you know. And luckily, she realized this, and she came and picked me up, and she ended up taking me up to Washington, D.C. to go see my sister. And I don't, I didn't really plan on getting sober, you know. I knew that I didn't want to live like that anymore, and I didn't plan on really going to AA. I came up there, stayed at my sister's house one night. My mom said, why don't you go to this meeting tomorrow? And honestly, I really didn't feel like going. You know, I felt like I knew it all. Felt like I've heard everything those AAs have to say. I felt like they're all older than me, you know. I felt like, I've heard it all. You know, what are they going to tell me? But luckily, I was beat down enough at this point. I said, all right. I said, I'll go to this meeting. And I went to this meeting. It was in Washington, D.C. It was a Sunday night. And I walk up, and there was like 150, 200 people outside smoking cigarettes, you know, like this cloud of smoke, you know. And it was very intimidating. But these were all, there was a lot of young folks there. And everybody seemed to be happy, you know, and talking with each other loud, laughing, stuff like that, you know, stuff that, I mean, I wasn't laughing when I was new. There was nothing funny about life, you know. And I went to this meeting, and it's now my home group, and I'm blessed to have fallen into it, you know, because it's exactly what I needed, you know. I walked into that meeting, and people were there for me, and people stuck their hand out to me, you know, and that is, if people wouldn't have done that, if people would have just turned their back, or, you know, you're just another Joe Schmo walking in, I don't know if I'd be here, you know. People stuck their hand out, and people talked to me, you know, about their drinking, you know, and asked me questions, and asked me if I had a sponsor, and I got asked, do you have a sponsor, so many times, I was just like, oh, I give up, you know, will you be my sponsor, like, oh, you know, I can't take it anymore, and so I got this guy to be my sponsor. I knew nothing about him, you know, but now looking back, I mean, he clearly could run my life better than I was, you know. I ran it right into the crapper, so I started working the steps with this sponsor, and the steps is, I mean, that's the basis of my sobriety. And when I came to AA when I was 18, I didn't even know what the steps were. I don't even remember looking at them. I don't remember even seeing them, you know. And this time I've been able to stay sober, and I think it's due to the steps. I started working the steps with his sponsor, and he got, he pushed me right into it real quick. You know, there wasn't any, like, oh, we'll do a step a year or something like that. There was none of that, you know. There was like, read the doctor's opinion, you know, read Bill's story, and then write your story. You know, that's what he had me do for my first step. And I wrote my story, and and there's a like a men's they call it the men's advance. It's, you know, it's like two, it's like 150 guys that go out to Front Royal and do like meetings all weekend long. And I was like a week sober, and he's like, you have to go to this, like you need to go to this. I felt like, oh, this is terrible. Like, this is not, you know, this is just horrible. I don't want to do this at all. but like I said, something in me, I had no plan. And I started to see, like, you know, I started to get comfortable with him, at least, you know. And he was like, you can ride with me to this meeting, you know. And he carried me, you know, for my first months, you know. And I went to this men's advance, and I read my sponsor my story, and reading my story, it was extremely clear, you know, that I was powerless over alcohol, and my life was unmanageable. My outsides were I couldn't work, I couldn't do anything, people hated me, you know, everything. My life was just a mess, and inside too, you know, my emotions were unmanageable. I didn't know what was going on inside, you know. And it was clear, you know, those days where I said, I'm not going to drink today, or I'm just going to have this 22, it never worked, you know. I had no power over it. I could say it all day long. Once I took that first drink, you know, I'd have that craving, the phenomenon of craving, and there was no telling what was going to happen, you know. And so going over that first step, I could see, you know, it was very clear. The pen to paper, it was right in my face, you know. And I started to slowly want, you know, I don't know when it happened, but I started to slowly get a little more comfortable and a little more comfortable with these people and meeting new people. People would pick me up every day. I was going to two meetings a day. And I slowly started to not think about drinking every single day, you know, and life started to get a little bit better, you know, and now it's like, through taking those actions, through calling my sponsor every day, going to these meetings, talking to people, picking up the chairs after the meeting, I'd go early, help do the coffee, these things were slowly restoring me to sanity, and it was... And I slowly started to be comfortable with myself, you know. And you know, so I worked through that, and I remember getting to my third step, and I remember my sponsor had me. I remember having to kneel down with him and say the third step prayer, and I was like, this is so weird. I was like, this is the weirdest thing ever, you know. And I really, at that time, I didn't understand it. I didn't understand the third step whatsoever. I just felt like, you know, I'm willing to do these actions. If he tells me to get down on my knees and pray this, okay, I'll do it, you know. I don't want to drink. And that's kind of how it went for me. And I did that. And, you know, later on, the third step came to mean a lot more for me. But I worked with this sponsor for about 6 months. And I definitely changed. But I ended up ruining that relationship. I said some things that were just really, you know, they were totally uncalled for, and he got heated, and I got heated, and you know, he said, you need to find someone else to sponsor you, and so you know, that night he fired me, you know. And that night I had never had it, but I had that night a compulsion to drink, you know, and I was crying, and I was, again, I had this anger that I had had when I would drink, you know. I had this anger inside that just tore me apart, you know. And I felt like, screw this, I'm going to go drink, you know. I was like, I'm just going to walk down to Georgetown and go to a bar and start drinking. And I started walking, and I don't know what it was, something in me, I picked up the phone and called a buddy of mine, you know. I called this guy Lou, and I called this guy Sam. And Lou had some time in AA, and Sam, he had less time than I had. He had, you know, a month or something, not even. And he, you know, but both of them, you know, this was like 11 at night. Both of them dropped what they were doing, like raced into D.C., came and picked me up, talked to me, you know, took me to someone's house and you know, kind of talked me down, fed me, you know. And I ended up sleeping over at someone else's house, and that night I stayed sober, you know. And that was probably the closest I had ever been to drinking in my sobriety. And it felt like it could have definitely happened. But that was like one of those. That was one of those things. It's like the people, my friends in AA will do anything for me, you know, to help me stay sober and to help me, you know. And that was, it was like a, I mean, it was amazing to see that, you know, and to stay sober that night. And I ended up asking another guy to sponsor me, just cause I knew nothing about this guy, you know, but my good friend was sponsored by him, you know, this guy that I, started to become good friends with in AA, he was sponsored by him. And I said, all right, you know, I'll give him a call and I'll do it. Cause I didn't know who else to ask. And so I give my sponsor now, Eric, a call, and I left a voicemail like, hey, this is Rob, will you sponsor me? You know, he called me back. He was like, first off, you shouldn't ask that over a message. He's like, why don't you talk to me? You know, and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, okay, you know. And he was, you know, he ended up agreeing with it. And again, he pushed me right into the steps also, you know, and thank God. And I went and I, you know, I did a 4-step with him. And, you know, there was no bright lights, no burning bushes, but, I did that 4-step with him. And, I mean, I don't know, for the first time, I guess I was completely honest with one person. I know he obviously knew, you know, everything about me, you know, all my defects, all the, you know, crazy stuff I had done, you know, so he knew enough about me, so later on, like, he could kind of call me out on some of the stuff that I do, you know, because my defects were definitely still there, you know, just because I said them to him and whatnot, they were still there, you know, and doing the 5th step, it was definitely still there, and 6 and 7, again, when I first got into it, I didn't, you know, I read it. I didn't understand what it meant, really. I honestly don't think, I mean, until I started sponsoring a guy and taking him through the steps, I started to see the steps in a complete different way. And I was like, that's what that means, you know? But at the time, I didn't understand, you know, but I was willing. I was like, all right, you know, I'll do whatever it takes. You know, let's do it. And I kind of jumped through them, you know? I kind of jumped through the steps pretty quickly, and I got into the 8th step, and I made my list from most of what was on my 4-step, and I made that list, and I had to become willing. And I, you know, my mom, my sister, those were the people who I had to go to first, and you know, direct amends, because I could, you know, without hurting anybody. And I went to them, and I made an amends, and, you know, with my mom, I remember, it took me a little while. I had to become willing to, you know, I had to be willing to be able to pay back over $20,000, you know. And I came to her, and, you know, and I said, like, I probably owe you a lot of money. I wrecked a lot of your cars, you know. I know you got me this lawyer and stuff like that. And I became willing to do what it would take. And luckily she, you know, being a mom, she was like, you don't have to do that. Just stay sober, you know. And so I did that, and I made amends with my sister, and I've gotten those relationships back, and I try to stay there, and I try to be accountable to those relationships. I try to show up and help out, you know, because it definitely takes two people to have a relationship. And my father, you know, like I mentioned, he died when I was like 5 years old, and I never thought about it. I didn't cry when he died. I never thought about it, you know. And I didn't think, I felt like I didn't have any attachment to him, you know, so it was whatever. But my sponsor kind of pushed me to talk to a couple guys who had similar experiences and what they did and stuff like that. And I ended up talking to a couple guys and what these guys had done, you know. And some of them had exact experience, the same exact experience. I ended up, you know, kind of taking a deeper look, and am I resentful at God for taking my father, and I ended up writing a letter basically about what I had done, you know, and about my life, and about what I was trying to do now to try to mend these relationships and try to live a better way of life, and try to be there for my mom and my sister. And my father was buried in Florida around Fort Lauderdale-ish. And I wrote this letter, and my sponsor said, well, he said, maybe you should go down there to his grave, you know? You haven't been there since you were like five. I was like, well, I was like, I guess. I was like, you know, it's all the way in Florida, you know? He's like, well, I'll go with you. And my sponsor paid for himself and paid to help, you know, we split the hotel room and we flew to Florida, and I went to my father's grave and knelt there and read that letter to his grave, and I would have thought that was corny, you know. I would have felt like whatever, but something happened that day, you know, and I don't know if it was necessarily like that day, but something inside of me opened up a little bit, you know, and I never had much of a heart. I never really cared for other people. I was extremely selfish, you know. I only cared about myself, and something that day opened up inside of me, and I started to be able to help other people a little better, you know. Started to be able to listen to people instead of just waiting to talk, you know. And that was huge, you know. That was a huge change in my life, you know, due to the steps, definitely. And kind of shooting back to the third step, you know, it became, the meaning of it changed, you know. I didn't know what it meant much in the beginning, but I've come to find out, like, when I want something or I feel like I'm going to lose something, I will take my will back, you know, and I will run the show, you know. And a good example of that was I was working at Nordstrom, a retail store, and I had been the assistant manager, and I was making good money for, you know, just having a high school degree or whatever, and I stepped down out of my position, and they never changed the pay, you know. So I'm making like, I was making a killing, you know. I mean, I was getting at least like a grand on top, or like, well, I'm like $1,200 more than I should have been making, you know. And I was like, oh, this is great, like I like this, you know. And I had like 3 years sober at this point, probably, and I was like, well, I don't have to tell anyone. They're the ones messing up, you know? Like, they're a big corporation. They should be on top of this stuff, you know? And I held on to that, and I didn't say anything to my sponsor. I didn't say anything to my friends, and I just kept getting this money, and I just kept my mouth shut, you know? And eventually, doing that and keeping that secret, you know? Not telling on myself, really. I got to a point where I wanted to drink. You know, I would go to meetings, I felt uncomfortable. I felt like I couldn't talk to people. I was starting to not call people, you know, call my friends and stuff. Calling my sponsor was getting really difficult. And you know, both of my headlights went out on my car, and I went to the dealership and I said, you know, both headlights went out, like, it's probably not the bulbs, yeah. They're like, oh, no, it's the bulbs, you know. So they make me buy two new bulbs, put them in, didn't work, and I'm like, I'm getting furious, you know, because I'm not living any kind of spiritual program at this point. And I'm getting furious. They're like, well, we can't fix it until like a couple days from now. And I'm like, that, you know, I start screaming, making a scene. I jump in my car and like squeal wheels out of the parking lot. And I'm like going down the road and I'm sitting in traffic. Yeah. And I'm like, you know, and I'm sitting there. I look over and there was a beer store and it looked good, you know. And all that anger that like I said, I never felt usually in sobriety. It's like it came right back, you know, and it was overwhelming. And I looked over at that beer store, and I could feel what alcohol does to me, you know. And I it was like I could smell and taste the beer, and I was always a beer drinker. I loved beer, and it scared me. And I called my sponsor. You know, I don't know what that is, but I called my sponsor instead of going to a drink, and I got honest with him and started back again, you know, and you know, basically like 6 and 7, I learn through pain, you know. I have to get myself in these jackpots to learn this stuff, you know. People can tell me their experience on things lots of times, and I'm like, that's great, you know. But I have to learn through my experience, you know, and that's what I've done through my sobriety. I mean, I'm lucky, you know, by the grace of God, I've been able to stay here, and something has changed inside of me due to these steps and seeking a higher power. You know, I now believe in a higher power, and I get down on my knees and pray day and night. You know, to stay sober a day, and thank you for keeping me sober that day. And it's funny, I never had religion or anything like that, but I, you know, pretty much started looking into religion because of the girl I'm, you know, dating. And I ended up getting confirmed and all this stuff. And you know, this is just my experience, but I'm not good at sitting by myself to meditate. You know, I'm not good at those kind of ways of seeking a higher power, but something when I'm lots of times if I just go into the church and I just sit there, it's something peaceful, and I feel a little bit of calm and ease, and I'm able to, it's like I have a moment, you know, I have that brief moment where I feel like I am in touch with my higher power, you know. And a lot of the stuff that they preach I don't necessarily believe. You know, I my 11th step has been a little weird, you know, a little bit different. And my 12th step has evolved. I am able to help people. You know, I'm sponsoring 2 guys right now, which mean the world to me, because like I said, when I take them through the book, I see things that I've never saw before. And it means completely, it's something completely different, you know. And not necessarily just sponsoring guys, but just like the people did for me, sticking out their hand to me, you know. And sometimes it's tough, man. Sometimes I'm very complacent, just wanting to talk to my buddies and stuff like that. But I need to, in order to stay sober, I need to, you know, strive to do better at talking to a new guy, at helping someone else out who's struggling. And it's kind of funny, you know, God has a funny way of doing things. The first guy I ever sponsored, you know, I went to this meeting and I saw this, you know, this guy was clearly new, and I walked up to him and I said, hey, you know, what's going on? How are you? And he's like, I'm good. You know, he's like, I just got out of prison for 9 years on attempted murder. I was like, oh, that's deep, you know. And this guy, you know, had tattoos all over his face, all gang tattoos all over his hands and body and all this. He's like, will you be my sponsor? And I was like, oh my God. I'm like, this is little country white guy. And he scared the life out of me, you know. But I was like, sure, you know. I was too intimidated to say, like, will you take direction, call me every day, stuff like that, you know. But I was like, yeah, I'll sponsor you. I was like, don't beat me up, you know. And I started sponsoring this guy, and it was funny. I had, you know, this girlfriend at the time broke up with me, and I was, like, crying. And I'm, like, sitting in my car, like, contemplating things, you know. And my phone rings, and I pick it up, and like, oh, Raphael, you know, this guy that I'm sponsoring. He's like, hey, what's up, man? You know? I was like, hey, what's going on? He's like, are you crying? I was like, no. He's like, what's the matter with you? I was like, my girlfriend just broke up with me, you know. He's like, oh, sorry, will you come pick me up, you know? I was like, sure, you know. And I went and picked him up, and I stayed sober, you know. I'm not sure where he is now, but I've gotten to stay sober, and definitely, you know, helping him, praying. It's like that little bit of insurance for that day, you know, that I can stay sober. And I mean, I've been blessed in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've had a complete, you know, personality change, due to the steps, and thank God for that, and thank God for, you know, my sponsor for putting up with me, and I'm grateful to be able to come out here and share my experience, and thank you.